Fans, it's great to have you back with us. It's Giants and Padres coming up. It's going to be a heck of a game today. We're joined by Jason Stark. He's a senior writer for The Athletic, and he's the recipient of the 2019 Career Excellence Award winner. And a great honor for Jason. Jason, how are you?
Marty, I'm good. You know, when I received that award, it wasn't known as the BBWA Career Excellence Award, but it's just the world we live in.
I know. It was the J.G. Taylor Spink Award. And look, I've read the sporting news my whole life. I met Edith Spink, who was the the wife of C.C. Johnson Spink. But J.G. Taylor Spink had a lot of segregationist ideas in the 40s, and it just wasn't appropriate to continue the award to be named after him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Makes me the answer to a very strange trivia question, though, huh? the last person to actually be presented with that award.
Boy, wow. All right, let's talk a little ball. First of all, I just want to tell everyone they should be part of The Athletic. You write a tremendous column every week on sort of the weird and wild things of baseball. Jason, how did that column come about? And we'll talk about some of the things you wrote about.
Well, somehow or other, this became my niche. I'm not sure exactly how, Marty, but it really started back when I was working in Philadelphia. When I came off the Phillies beat me, it was in the 80s, so it's going to be a while. You know, there was a column that somebody else was writing called Baseball Week in Review, where they were literally reviewing the week in baseball. And I said, you know, I don't want to do it quite like that. And it pretty quickly evolved into a column on just kind of the fun, the laugh out loud, the weird, the crazy, the unusual, the one-of-a-kind baseball moments, the stuff that hasn't happened since 1912. And, like, somehow or other, I just developed an eye for that sort of thing. So somewhere along the line, my mom told me, you should write a book and call it I Never Saw That Before. So I never exactly wrote that book, but I've been writing it in column form almost every week since.
That's amazing. It really is. Let's talk about a couple of things this week, and then the stuff last week was really what we learned in April. Is it's good baseball information. I'll just throw the name out to you. Dylan Cease of the White Sox. All of a sudden, he's about a five-page column of what he accomplished. Here, let's hear it.
All right. Dylan Cease does not hit for a living, Marty. He pitches for a living. He pitches for the White Sox. They're an American League team. But this week they're in Cincinnati, which meant we were playing under National League rules this year only. And so Dylan Cease had to hit for the first time since high school. So he was drafted in 2014. He had not seen a pitch in 7 years. And then what happened? This is the most baseball thing ever. He went 3-for-3. Now, I want you to think about this. Mookie Betts doesn't have a 3-for-3 game yet this year. Freddie Freeman hasn't gotten 3 hits in a game this year. DJ LeMahieu, Francisco Lindor, I could make quite a list. And then an American League pitcher who has not seen a pitch in 7 years did that. I don't know what's wrong with me. I tried to go through every pitcher who was remotely like him as far back as I could. And I think it's pretty safe to conclude that there has never been any player with zero professional plate appearances who then showed up at the park, they sent him to home plate with a bat, and he then went 3-for-3. But that is kind of the beauty of baseball. Am I right?
I love it. And I say it all the time. That's baseball. So not only does he go 3-for-3 in the game, but he pitches a hell of a game, too.
Yeah, and this is the other part of this. He pitched 6 innings in this game. He gave up 1 hit and struck out 11. So a couple things. He's the first American League pitcher to get more hits than the other team got in any game since Vida Blue for the A's almost 50 years ago. And then the other incredible thing with another A's connection is first pitcher, or I should say second pitcher in the live ball era to give up one hit on the mound, strike out at least 10 hitters, and get three hits himself since Catfish Hunter in Catfish's perfect game for the A's. Again, this was 50 years ago, 1968. And here's the really amazing backstory, is that that day, Catfish Hunter rode to the park with a guy named Tony La Russa, who was on the A's roster. Tony arrived at the park and then was told he was getting sent down. But the upshot is there have only been two games like this in 100 years. They happened more than 50 years apart. And Tony La Russa was at the park for both games. You just can't make this up.
And today, May 8th, is the anniversary of Catfish's perfect game.
Of course it is, right? Of course.
Of course. So that's baseball. Boy, what a moment. All right. The other one is the pitcher for the Braves, and I'll let you pronounce his first name. Enoa is his last name, but this is another moment of baseball. Hits a grand slam. He homers in consecutive games, and now we're going back to names like Tony Cloninger and people like that.
Right. All right. His name is Huascar Enoa, and there's a million ways to go with this. I mean, one is the best hitter on his team, the Braves, is Freddie Freeman. It took Freddie Freeman 10 years to hit a grand slam. And this guy's a pitcher, and he just goes strolling up there and cranks one off the back of the center field bullpen wall in Washington the other day. So, okay, there's that. But since you brought up the Tony Cloninger connection, back in 1966, Tony Cloninger did something nobody ever does. He hit two grand slams in one game. All right, so it's 55 years since that happened. In all that time, two Braves pitchers have hit a grand slam. One is this guy the other day, Enoa. The other is Jaime Garcia, who did it 4 years ago. The best part of that is when the Braves traded Jaime Garcia, the guy they got back was Huascar Enoa.
I love it.
So, you know, it's just kind of, again, it's kind of my niche in life that people demand that I will tell them, well, has this ever happened? So, I mean, to try to figure out whether two guys who hit a grand slam have ever been traded for each other, that's a monstrous research project. So I asked my friends at Stats for help, and it took them all day to figure this out, but they did it. It hadn't happened in, again, almost 50 years. The Steve Carlton-Rick Wise trade back in 1972. Rick Wise hit one then for the Phillies and got traded for Steve Carlton, who then came over to the Phillies and hit a slam, even though it took him 12 years. That's about the shortest version of that story I could possibly tell you.
I love it. I love it. It's great, great baseball. Jason Stark is with us. This is what goes on in baseball every day. I'm going to give you another part of the Tony Cloninger story. Of course, Tony Cloninger hit the two grand slams against the San Francisco Giants. He was one of the final two high school pitchers that the Giants were going to consider signing. And the Braves got in there and gave Tony Cloninger $100,000, so the Giants got knocked out of getting Tony Cloninger, and of course now he hits the grand slams against the Giants. But the pitcher, the second pitcher who they eventually signed, was Gaylord Perry, and he was the second pitcher. So they end up with Perry because Cloninger got $100,000, and they ended up with the Hall of Famer Gaylord Perry. How about that?
It's amazing in baseball, the stuff that happens by accident, isn't it?
I love it. I love it. It's a great story. Well,
yeah,
a lot is going on. A lot is going on in baseball, and you have to keep up with it every day. As I said, Jason Stark with us. You can read him in The Athletic. We just touched on a couple of things that he wrote about this week. But big news this week for Albert Pujols. And your colleague Ken Rosenthal wrote about it. It's been all over the news that he has been designated for assignment by the Angels. And it looks like the end of the line for him there. What's your take on Albert Pujols and getting released like that?
Well, I think if you really read the tea leaves, you could have seen for quite some time that this had a chance to happen. It's the last year of Albert's contract, so it's not like the Angels were in a situation where they still owed him $200 million or $100 million. This was it. And, you know, I don't like the idea of focusing just on the way Albert's time in Angels Land ended, because I think we should really be celebrating one of the most remarkable careers ever. But that's not how the Angels had a look at it. They had a new GM in Perry Minassian who came in with no ties to Albert, no emotional attachment, who was there to take a clean, clear, fresh look at everything. And it's just hard to look at the Albert Pujols of 2021 and say, he's our best option at first base. That's why you bring in a new GM. And look, they tried to find a smooth, graceful way to handle this. If they'd found one, Albert would have been sitting there at the press conference yesterday next to Perry and Joe Maddon. But the fact that he wasn't there tells you it's a little uncomfortable. So the thing that's really tough for me is, again, we're talking about one of the greatest right-handed hitters who ever lived. Marty, he was two hits away from catching Eddie Murray. And the reason that matters is it would have given him more hits than anyone in history who primarily played first base for a living. Two hits. It would have been really hard for me to do this when the guy was two hits away. Albert still wants to play. Maybe somebody will bring him in. But if you really look long and hard at the Albert Pujols and the player and hitter he is right now, it's a little hard to figure out who could bring him in and promise him playing time.
Well, Tony La Russa had him, and the White Sox are one of those teams that I know you're watching, but Abreu is off to such a terrible start, but, you know, you've got to give him a chance to get out of it. He's an MVP in the American League. You look at, of course, St. Louis. They've got Paul Goldschmidt, but it is St. Louis. They gave Albert like 15 standing ovations when he played there a couple of years ago. And then you got my team out here that they're always looking to come upon some bargain somewhere, and that's the Oakland A's, maybe one of those three.
Well, maybe. Now, I heard from a lot of people yesterday saying, oh, the Cardinals will sign him and let him get those 2-3 hits and pass Eddie Murray. And that's not what Albert has in mind. Albert doesn't want to just go be a ceremonial figure. He wants to play. And, I mean, the good news is you don't have to promise him any money to speak of, but you do have to promise him playing time. And can the A's really do that? Like, I don't see how a National League team can do it. I don't see how the White Sox can do it either, because Jose Abreu is the heart of that team. And the guy they discovered at DH is that Yermin Mercedes, who, look, he's, just face it, he's a lot more productive hitter than Albert right now. So that leaves the A's. I mean, the A's have done this with so many players through the years. But is Albert really the right fit? I just don't know that he is. But I hope he gets a chance to play, because the one thing you can say about him, he's not the same player he was, but he loves baseball as much as he ever did, and he's always wanted to earn every penny of his contract.
Boy, but let's see how it plays out. It's going to be an interesting week with him. He'll become a free agent in a day or two. Jason, yep. You wrote about the offensive numbers in April, and we've talked about this many, many times with all the experimental rules in the minor leagues this year and maybe pushing the mound back and things like that. But the offensive numbers in April, the lowest ever for many categories. Goodbye singles, goodbye doubles. What is baseball facing here? And Leonard Coppett always told me, don't worry about 1 month. You have to get a good sample size. But this has been going on for a while now.
Yeah, it totally has. And, you know, those numbers that you talked about, Marty, the fewest hits ever in the history of baseball. The average team is getting about 7.5 hits a game. 7.5, hitting .232. That's the average team, you know. And as you mentioned, there's not a lot of singles anymore. There's not a lot of doubles anymore. Like, I understand why we're headed for, at this rate, 2,000 fewer singles than we saw the last full season, which was 2 years ago. I'm having a hard time figuring out why we're looking at about 1,400 fewer doubles. That part doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, but like we don't have to figure out all the little permutations. This is the biggest thing, and that is 1,000 more strikeouts than hits. We never even had 1,000 more strikeouts than hits in a season until last year. Now we've had 1,000 more strikeouts than hits in a month. And when people talk about the three true outcomes, it's really the one true outcome. It's strikeouts that are devouring the game. And so I think we're looking at, if not a crisis, it's a potential crisis, and baseball needs to treat it as one. It's why you see all these rule change experiments in the minor leagues. It's why you see the Atlantic League experimenting with moving the mound back a foot, because you got to figure out some way to counteract the effects of the greatest velocity from pitchers in the history of the game.
Mm. Well, I think the shift is going to go away, I'll tell you that. And let's see how it works in the Atlantic League, moving the mound back a foot. There's been a lot of scientific evidence saying that it would be okay to do that. No, you know, wouldn't have more injuries or things like that. I'll let you go with this. It was a Giant game against Colorado on Wednesday, and it's 6-4, and the Giants are up in the top of the ninth inning. Giants are losing, and the Rockies walk the first two. All right, the tying runs are on base. Then they strike out the next two. And then Darren Ruff goes 3-2, and he dribbles a ground ball to short, and Trevor Story makes a great play and throws him out. The inning took probably about 20, 25 minutes. It was high drama. But the thing was, would they strike out? Because every count was 3-2, and finally hit a ground ball. So one ball was in play, and that was the way the game ended. How about that?
And it took 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he just summed up baseball in 2021, man. Like, you love baseball, I love baseball. And our love for baseball has not changed. But I don't know how anybody could look at the sport and think, we don't need better rhythm and more great athletes doing that great athlete thing of theirs.
Mm, boy, they sure do. Hey, Jason, thanks for taking the time to come on. You're a big hit out here in the Bay Area. Do a great job with The Athletic, and I look forward to your column every week. I don't know how you do it, but you come up with these things, and it's a pleasure to have you on, so thanks so much.
Marty, the pleasure is mine. You do a great job, and it's always fun to be on with you. Thanks.
All right. That is Jason Stark. More coming up, KNBR 680-1045, the sports leader.